WBSM presents The Tim Weisberg Show, streaming live on WBSM.com and the WBSM app. Call 508-996-0500. Send us app chat messages and open line voicemails using the WBSM app. Now, The Tim Weisberg Show.
Friday to you. A fun Friday brought to you by D's Hot Dogs in New Bedford, and hope your day is starting off well. Mine is so far. It's nice and warm out there. It is wet and it is windy, and the wind is only going to pick up during the course of the day, and the rain is only going to pick up during the course of the day, but it's going to stay around this temperature. We got 52 degrees right now, so just be thankful that it's rain and not snow, I guess. But we will have, of course, it is Fun Friday, so we will talk about some fun stuff, and we will have our Fun Friday question. But there's also some serious news to get to. If you went to bed early last night, you may not be aware that they have captured, I'm sorry, shouldn't say captured. They have solved the Brown University shooting, and apparently the shooting of the MIT professor. They were connected after all, and the gunman has been identified, and he is dead. He took his own life. They cracked the case on Wednesday, with the help of a witness. They were able to then track the suspect to a storage facility in Salem, New Hampshire, that he had rented. And when they arrived there, they found that he had taken his own life. So it was kind of a whirlwind 24 hours for law enforcement once they got this information, which again came from a witness. From my understanding, from what they were saying last night on television, this witness was a custodian at Brown in that building and saw the suspect in the bathroom on, I believe it was December 11th, and said, "Hey, like, what are you doing here? You don't belong here." And then had seen this person walking around outside. And because he was able to identify the car, the rental car that the suspect had, which he had been parking near Brown for quite some time, for a couple of days, he was able to identify that vehicle. That led to the police then being able to utilize surveillance footage to track that vehicle, identify that vehicle, trace it back to a car rental place in Boston, and then be able to determine who it was that rented the car, and then trace his financial records to get to the storage facility. Now, they didn't quite explain it because they said that he was using credit cards that were not with his name. So they didn't say how they were able to specifically trace him if he was, you know, covering his tracks. My guess, and I don't remember anybody asking this question, so maybe they did. But my guess is that, you know, whatever name he used for the rental car, he also used for the storage facility. So whatever card he used for the rental car, he also used for the storage facility. So even though it wasn't his name, you know, they knew that he was using that same alias. So he was identified as 48-year-old Claudio Manuel Neves Valente. And he's originally from Portugal. He had come on a student visa to attend Brown in the year 2000. And he was only there for about 6 months, from 2000 to 2021. I know in the news clips, U.S. Attorney Leah Foley said that he was at Brown from 2000 to 2021. And I think she misspoke. It was 2000 to 2001. And then he stopped going to classes in 2001. He was in a doctorate program taking physics classes and would have taken classes in the building in which he conducted the shooting. And so he stopped going to classes in 2001 and then formally withdrew from the university in 2003. And I believe it was 2017 that he attained permanent resident status in the United States. So he was a student that likely took classes in that building, and that's where the physics classes are. So he would have known the building. He was also apparently in the same academic program back in Portugal as the MIT professor that was killed. So the belief now is that they did know each other. However, it was unsure of if they had maintained contact since they went to school together in the 90s. Now, I heard some speculation from, you know, the talking heads on television. It's entirely possible that they maintain contact. If you come from Portugal in 2000, and I'm not sure when the MIT professor came, but if there's somebody from your class, and if they did know each other in Portugal, if there's somebody that you know here, you would seek them out and, you know, especially if you don't know anybody else. You know, you seek them out and you say, hey, you know, you want to go get a beer sometime or something like that. So they might have been in contact, but they don't have any proof of that yet. But I saw someone else talking, and I don't know if this is true. They were just speculating too. But they said it likely wasn't a large program that they were in because it was, you know, kind of this advanced physics kind of stuff, even in high school. So that, you know, if you, you know, kind of like if you've got a senior class, you know, it's, you probably at least are aware of each other, even if you're not friends. And so the question becomes, you know, motive now, and they're still investigating that. They didn't want to speak to motive at all. I thought I saw someone, but, you know, I don't know if this is 100% something that law enforcement said or if this was just something that one of the talking heads said, but there didn't seem to be any connection between Valente and the students. So the speculation, the theory that someone put out on TV last night was, you know, maybe he blamed Brown for him not getting his doctorate, for him not being able to handle the classes. Well, for whatever reason, he withdrew from the university. And as this person said, oftentimes when you are going to fail out, a student will drop out, they'll withdraw. So that might have been what the case was. So if he's angry at Brown for the way his life turned out, maybe that explains why he would have gone to the building that he studied at and opened fire. And by the way, they asked I think it was the Rhode Island Attorney General, if I remember correctly, if that's the person that they had. Yeah, I think so. Peter Naronov. So they asked him, you know, what he said when he allegedly started shooting, what he allegedly said when he started shooting. And so I guess some of the witnesses said he let out a yell, and some of them said he kind of let out a barking sound. And then, you know, nothing that would indicate he was specifically targeting any of those individuals. And so that maybe he also, if he didn't know the professor, the MIT professor, you know, closely, the speculation was, well, maybe he just looks at him as that could have been me. You know, here's this guy that's the head of the most prestigious group at MIT that is cracking nuclear fusion. And, you know, could be the person that brings us unlimited free energy. That I could see that as being somebody you could be jealous of. So the theory makes sense. But again, it's all just speculation at this point because law enforcement has not spoken to motive. But they were very, it seemed like they were very confident that they'll be able to piece things together now that they know who this person was, now that they have Valente's identity, and they can kind of go back and look and see where he's been, what he's done, things that he might have posted online. I mean, obviously anybody, not just people that are in the news business, but anybody, you see his name, you hear his name, you start searching. You start looking on social media, you start looking on Google. And I didn't find much in just a couple of minutes that I was looking. But, you know, usually what happens is with people like this, people who have a sick and twisted mind, there's other places of the internet where they post or where they're researching. And those are not areas of the internet that I go to, that I even would know how to go to. So the law enforcement does, and they'll be able to dig deeper into those areas. Because I'm sure he left some kind of digital footprint. So, and it also explains, I think, to some degree, you know, like when you hear them go back through the steps that happened, and you kind of have a better understanding of how law enforcement operated on this case. So, they're saying, yes, we did not have that much to go on until this witness came forward. And I guess this witness had posted something on Reddit. And the police were aware of that Reddit post, but that ultimately this custodian, who John Miller on CNN was referring to as John, I don't know if that's an alias or if that's his actual name, but he apparently approached a couple police officers and said, I think I have some information that can help you. So we'll find out more, I'm sure, in the days to come. But right now, you know, I guess we can rest easy knowing that law enforcement did its job. And I would think it seems like this witness, you know, wasn't looking for glory or fame or anything, but hopefully they'll be able to identify him and he can be honored by the city of Providence and by Brown University. And the attorney general for Rhode Island was asked if he's going to get the $50,000 reward because, you know, there's not going to be a trial now. The suspect's dead. And the AG said, well, you know, if it's up to me, I'd give it to him. I'm advocating to give it to him. So, but it doesn't seem like that's what made him. It wasn't the reward that made him come forward. It sounds to me like he wasn't sure and didn't want to malign somebody or, you know, lead law enforcement on a wild goose chase if it turns out not to be the person. So he wasn't sure, but then it sounds like people on Reddit kind of pushed him and said, no, you should bring this to them. But anyway, 508-996-0500, if you want to chime in on that or anything else that's on your mind. We'll talk about more things this morning, other things as well, but certainly I'm sure you have a reaction to that news and whatever else is on your mind. 508-996-0500. I've got to take a break. We will be right back.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the 1-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. brought to you by the Ad Council and its pre-diabetes awareness partners.
As you age, you may have questions about finding transportation, healthy meals, or other services around your home and in your community. And the Elder Care Locator has the answers at 1-800-677-1116. Our caring advisors can connect you to trustworthy local experts and the support you need to age well at home. Real people, real assistance, and real connections are just a phone call away with the Elder Care Locator. 1-800-677-1116.
Wake up!
Starting your day the right way with the Tim Weisberg Show. Mornings on WBSM.
The suspect in the Brown University shooting has been found dead. A family suing a hospital over a bone mix-up and four killed after the latest drug boat strike.
From the Cottage Street Motors WBSM Newsroom, this is WBSM News.
A man believed to be the suspect in the Brown University shooting has been found dead after police swarmed a storage facility in Salem, New Hampshire last night. The man is suspected of killing two students and injuring nine more people after opening fire inside of a Brown classroom on Saturday. Police are also investigating a potential link to the Monday killing of MIT professor Nuno Loureiro. Providence Police Chief Oscar Perez identified the man as 48-year-old Claudio Neves Valenti, whose last known address was in Miami. Perez said the man was found dead after taking his own life. The Pentagon says four people were killed in the most recent strike on an alleged drug boat in the Eastern Pacific Ocean. The announcement came as the Senate Armed Services Committee was shown a full video of the September 2nd double-tap strike on another boat.
Because of classification, I can't tell you what's in the second video, but I can tell you that I was shocked and sickened.
Senator Richard Blumenthal, a Connecticut Democrat, says he thinks the withholding of the footage from the American public is unjustifiable. U.S. Southern Command has posted video on social media of this week's strike, writing that it was ordered by Secretary of War Pete Hegseth, and the vessel was traveling along a known narco-trafficking route. President Trump has installed new plaques to the Presidential Walk of Fame outside of the Oval Office. The White House says Trump wrote many of the plaques himself. The ones installed under President Biden and President Obama are critical of the former commanders-in-chief. Biden's plaque refers to him as sleepy, crooked, and the worst president in American history. Meanwhile, Obama's plaque calls him one of the most divisive figures in American history and claims that he spied on Trump's 2016 presidential campaign. The family of a former employee of Henry Ford St. John Hospital is suing the Detroit hospital for staff members losing part of her skull during a surgery in 2023. Edna Burton worked for the hospital for over 20 years and had surgery to relieve brain pressure after she suffered a stroke.
We think it's asinine that, you know, they're suggesting that she's better off with the artificial skull compared to her natural God-given chunk of her skull.
That's attorney Cameron Bell, who is representing Burton's family. Staff told her family a few months later that the piece of her skull that was removed was mixed up with bones from another patient, Edna Brown, and they provided a prosthetic plate instead. Burton is now bedbound, needs a feeding tube, and has not talked since after the surgery. Family was given a $25 gas card by the hospital for the loss of the skull. Legislation that would ban gender transition treatments for minors is advancing through the House with GOP support.
The legislation criminalizes gender transition surgery or supplying hormones to minors and would make those who provide gender transition treatments subject to up to 10 years in prison. The bill passed the House mostly along party lines, with Democrats saying the legislation tramples on parental rights and allows politicians to make deeply personal decisions for families. The bill may not have enough support in the Senate to get past a filibuster. I'm Rory O'Neill.
Louisiana Attorney General Liz Merle is reporting the discovery of a voodoo doll in New Orleans. The felt doll was found tied to a tree where ongoing federal roundup of illegal immigrants has led to protests. The doll wears clothes labeled ICE and has a lot of pins shoved into it. Merle stated that it's a sign of desperation that pro-illegal immigration radicals are having to resort to voodoo dolls. The last U.S. pennies minted have sold for over $16 million.
Production of the copper-plated one-cent coin was stopped this year as each coin was costing four times more than it was worth in U.S. currency. Last week, the last of the U.S. pennies were sold at auction in about 233 coin sets, with each one including a commemorative 24-karat gold penny. I'm Tammy Trujillo.
The Texas Heartbeat Act, which bans abortions after a fetal heartbeat is detected, has had a huge impact. A new study found that since it went into effect in 2021, it has saved thousands of unborn lives.
This study just confirms that Texas is on the right track.
John Ciego with Texas Right to Life. The study was published in the Journal of American Medical Association and found that abortions dropped more than 18% since the law's enactment. The steepest drop was among minors.
WBSM Sports, brought to you by John C. Law.
Bruins lost to the Edmonton Oilers last night, 3-1. The Celtics will be in action with the Heat tonight at the Garden, 7 p.m. tip-off. And Sunday Night Football, it's the Patriots in Baltimore with the Ravens at 8:20.
Now your WPRI 12 forecast, brought to you by the Ultimate Men's Clinic.
A high wind warning for today and tonight, gusts of 50 to 60 miles per hour. Meanwhile, rain likely, heavy at times. A few isolated thunderstorms, temperatures upper 50s during the morning, 40s later in the day. Clearing, windy, colder tonight, lows in the upper 20s. Sunshine, dry, blustery on Saturday. Temperatures cooler in the lower 40s. Partly sunny, windy, and dry Sunday with a high of 48. For WBSM, I'm 12 News Chief Meteorologist Tony Petraca.
I'm Mike Roberts, WBSM News. This WBSM News update is brought to you by Stevie's Wine and Spirits. Look for the purple dot to try before you buy. Only at Stevie's Wine and Spirits in Fairhaven.
In 508-996-0500. And yeah, holiday. We got some holidays coming up, and we're going to be talking about holiday music as part of Fun Friday today, brought to you by D's Hot Dogs. Today's Fun Friday question is, what is the worst Christmas song of all time? So I'm sure there'll be, you know, people who have their favorites for the best, and that's an easy question to answer. Or, you know, maybe not necessarily easy, because you might have like, oh, I love this one. Oh, and I love this one, too. Oh, and I love this one, too. I mean, for me, it's my favorite is Christmas, Baby, Please Come Home, the U2 version. That's the first Christmas song that I play every year. And in fact, it'll be the first Christmas song I'll play today. But I love other ones. I love, you know, Father Christmas by the Kinks. Quiet Down, Fun 107. I have, you know, all the Dr. Demento Christmases and Twisted Christmas and all that stuff, the novelty stuff. I love that. I'm also a fan of the Very Special Christmas series of albums. So a lot of those songs will be some of my favorites for Christmas music. So, you know, it's a question that, you know, it kind of depends on your mood, you know, sometimes your best, but we all have that one song that we absolutely can't stand. And it doesn't have to be a specific version. Like, you might just say, I hate Silver Bells. It doesn't matter who sings it. I can't stand Silver Bells. And there's probably a few songs like that when it comes to Christmas music that I could say, but my absolute 1,000% least favorite Christmas song is Christmas Wrapping by the Waitresses. And for years, people have been like, it's not that bad. You got to listen to it again. Oh, it's not that bad. And I just, I can't. I think it's just the monotone singing that just irks me. Not that I don't like monotone singing. I mean, I love Cake. There's a lot of monotone singing in that. I love U2's Numb. The whole song is monotone. So I don't think that it's just that. I just think there's something about the song that irks me. Probably the fact that it was everywhere when I was growing up. It was the All I Want for Christmas is You before All I Want for Christmas is You. And I think it's because like stores thought, oh, we're going to be edgy. We're going to play this. And really, at that time, stores and malls and all that stuff, banks and all those places that you walked into, they played just traditional Christmas music. It was either instrumentals or it would be, you know, Johnny Mathis and Nat King Cole and Brenda Lee and things like that. It wasn't going to be modern stuff. But then they started pumping in. I remember the first time I heard Christmas Wrapping by the Waitresses was on the music system at Zaire in the Hanover Mall. Hanover Mall? No. I think it was in Quincy. And I was like, I don't like this. So you could certainly name that on your list as the worst Christmas song of all time, and I would agree with you. But there's other ones that I know people can't stand. So what is the worst Christmas song of all time? I know that's a little humbuggish of me to ask. But I was trying to go for not the easy one, you know? Not the one that, oh yeah, I love this. This is what I play every year. And I'm sure some people are going to vote for Mariah Carey, because that song has become ubiquitous and is probably too much for people. Some might not like some of the non-traditional takes on Christmas songs. So whatever it may be. Somebody once said to me, you know what song I can't stand for Christmas? I said, what was that? They said, Bruce Springsteen's Santa Claus is Coming to Town. It's like, what? How can you hate that? I love that. It's one of my favorites. It was the favorite for me when I was a kid. I was like, I just can't stand it. Just the same thing over and over again. I was like, yeah, you're not wrong. But that'll be our Fun Friday question today, brought to you by D's Hot Dogs. What is the worst Christmas song? And I'll probably play some of them as we go along. And then also, we can talk more about the brown shooter having been identified and found dead. We can talk about, there's a letter that was sent from the New Bedford Port Authority to the Office of the Inspector General regarding the report that was issued on the Pope's Island Marina and how it is, you know, the OIG says it's been mismanaged by the city of New Bedford and, well, by the Port Authority and by the DCR. And as you know, as we talked about and Mayor Mitchell has talked about on these airwaves, they didn't come and talk to anybody from the New Bedford Port Authority. They didn't request the documents. They didn't ask for the budgets and things like that. They just made these statements without doing any real investigation or taking basic investigatory steps. So this response letter basically is saying that's those same things, but also offering the evidence as to why what the OIG report claims is inaccurate. And bottom line is, they're trying to say that neither DCR nor the New Bedford Port Authority should be in charge of this because they've mismanaged it. And it's not even that it's not so much that's been mismanaged. It's that I don't want to characterize it as nobody's sure who's supposed to manage it. I mean, the city of New Bedford and the Port Authority is sure that they run operations there, but that DCR is required to make all of these improvements and renovations that are required, and it doesn't do that. And that the city has actually done some of that work on its own, but these bigger projects need to get done by DCR, and it doesn't do that. Mayor Mitchell said to me when he used to come in on my program when I was on during Chris's time slot, that the DCR needs to give that up and turn it over to the Port Authority to run so that it can be managed. It needs $5 million. It needs a $5 million replacement of the infrastructure over there. And the city would absorb that cost if necessary. But the mayor was hoping that they'd get, you know, $5 million in control of it and they could just handle it. But even if they just got control of it, the city could find the $5 million to repair it. So Frank Mulligan has a piece at southcoasttoday.com. I was going to write something yesterday, but I got the information later on in the day and I just didn't have time. So I don't know if I'll have the time to get something up there today, but you can read Frank Mulligan's report for sure. And the city will have it on their website as well. And then also at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app, a very interesting story that I came across my social media yesterday and I had no idea. I saw a friend posting pictures of Rob Reiner, the late Rob Reiner, from when he was 18 years old and saying, you know, did you know that Rob Reiner got his start in Plymouth? His first acting role was in Plymouth, Massachusetts, at the Priscilla Beach Theater in the Village of Manomet. And I had no idea. So I was like, where did you get these pictures from? And she said, I got them from this group. And I went into the group and I asked the person who was posting them. And he said, I got them from Priscilla Beach Theater. And so I reached out to Priscilla Beach Theater. They were fantastic. Got back to me with information and a bunch of photos. And so we got the story up there. And if you've never been to Priscilla Beach Theater, I remember it from when I was a kid. They had, and I grew up in Plymouth. So I spent, you know, from first grade through fifth grade in Plymouth. And I remember the commercial would come on TV for Priscilla Beach Theater. You know, hey kids, do you want to be a performer? And like they were doing Annie. I remember they did Annie, and you could see, you know, clips of the performances of Annie. And I said, wow, I didn't know that was there. And it's a barn theater is what they call it, which was a pretty popular thing back in the 1930s. They would turn these barns, as you know, people's farms were going under because of the Depression. They would turn these barns into theaters. And so that's what Priscilla Beach Theater is. And it is, you know, well-respected in the theater community for sure, and has had a number of famous people come through. And I write about it in the article, but Paul Newman in his early days acted there. Jennifer Coolidge, who is all over the place now, you hear on commercials here on WBSM. I think, what's the Ford Discover card? Oh, wow. That's her, you know, the female Owen Wilson. They sound the same. But she got her start there. Also, Curtis Sliwa, who just ran for New York City mayor and is the founder of the Guardian Angels, he was involved there when he was younger. So, but it was the first acting job of Rob Reiner, and he brought with him his best friend, Albert Einstein. So Carl Reiner, Rob Reiner's father, said, hey, my son's looking to get into acting. You know, could he come and spend the summer studying there? Which is, by the way, not really necessarily nepotism, because that's how most people got involved with Priscilla Beach Theater. Like my child wants to become an actor. And so they would get sent there to be part of it for the summer. And, you know, they call it summer stock. That's what that is. So, and that just means like you're going there and you're going to perform roles in whatever show that they put on. And so Rob Reiner, then known as Bob Reiner, went to
Priscilla Beach there and brought his best friend Albert Einstein with him. And Albert Einstein, you know better, under his stage name, because you couldn't be Albert Einstein and be an actor because, you know, nobody's going to take you seriously. But you know him by a stage name of Albert Brooks. And so the two of them were in this production of a play that was written by Carl Reiner, which, you know, people are like, oh, well, I was seeing some of the comments are like, oh, well, that's convenient, right? That it's the show about his life, his semi-autobiographical show, and his son plays him. And blah, blah, blah. And I was like, or what really happened was he was a big star at the time. And Priscilla Beach Theater said, yeah, we'll have your son come out here. And, oh, let's put on your show, because they knew it would get Carl Reiner to come out. And that would sell tickets because he was a big name at the time. But either way, you can read more about it at WBSM.com and on the WBSM app and see some of those old photos, including young Bob Reiner and young Albert Einstein in the cast of this show. All right, I got to get a break in here. We will be back in just a few moments.
You're listening to the Tim Weisberg Show. Call 508-996-0500.
It's Christmas. Baby, please come home.
Yeah!
Welcome back in. And men, if you are looking to give yourself a little Christmas gift, well, why not sign up for the Ultimate Men's Clinic's annual membership for testosterone treatments? You'll get monthly treatments that will make you feel like the best version of yourself. And then if you sign up, they're also throwing in a very special deal. Anybody that signs up for the monthly subscription to testosterone treatments will also receive 3 free sessions of P-Wave treatment. That is the ultrasonic waves that they use to treat ED. So it's a way, a simple, effective, non-painful, non-invasive way to help you with ED. Basically, like ultrasonic waves for kidney stones, it just helps break up the crystals, therefore improving blood flow. So all of that and more is available to you at the Ultimate Men's Clinic. Weight loss options, again, testosterone treatments, ED treatments, even if you have issues with your size. So whatever it may be, reach out to the Ultimate Men's Clinic at theultimatemensclinic.com. Theultimatemensclinic.com. You can see all of their different services that they offer, get a rough idea of even some of the pricing, and also see some before and after photos of the work that they've been able to do for men here on the South Coast. TheUltimateMensClinic.com. All right, I do have one more break I've got to get in before the end of the hour here. I got an app chat message from Missy. Missy, I want to let you know I just replied back to you with a link of folks that can help you over at the United Way. And then I also got an app chat message from Jeff, who is answering our Fun Friday question brought to you by D's Hot Dogs. What is the worst Christmas song of all time? And he says, Wonderful Christmas Time by Paul McCartney. That might make it onto the list today if we're going to play some of the bad songs. But I used to not like that song too. I'm like, oh, it's so repetitive. It's so like boring and bland. And then I listened to the lyrics and I realized, oh, wait a minute. It's talking about like a bunch of people gathering together under the moon and celebrating really a pagan tradition. I was like, this is a song about witches. This isn't a song about Christmas. That's just a meme that goes around. Anyway, let me get this last break in. We will be back in just a few moments. Yeah. Sorry about that, Jeff. Sorry. Anyway.